What up, folks? Get Out the Room is back. Get Out the Room, episode 122. Wow. Here we go. We only missed 1 week this season. We still here, though. Get Out the Room. We are a pop culture horror podcast. We talk about whatever we feel like, whatever makes sense to us. I am your host, Day, and as always, I got my people with me. Scott, what's going on?
Not much, but you know, I mean, given that we missed a week, it really, that just means this episode is like king size.
Well, I mean, shit, all our episodes are king size.
Just yeah, church touche.
We'd be eating up fucking gigabytes on people's hard drives and shit.
Yeah, they're probably like, God, we had to just download 5 gigs on this podcast again.
Right, right. Like, I had to enlist a fucking website to make these files smaller. Big as shit. No yawning, motherfucker. We just started. No yawning.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. Get that Mountain Dew. Do it up.
And, I did.
The greatest Caribbean hero tone. What's going on, dude?
Believe it or not, baby. I'm out here making it work.
True indeed. So you can find Get Out the Room anywhere good podcasts are found. The, what is that called? Apple Podcast, Google Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Podomatic, again, anywhere good podcast file. So go check us out. If you have not already subscribed. If you feel like leaving a review, please do that. We appreciate you. Helpful. Five stars. But yeah, so we missed a week. Life got in the way. So this week, we're going to jump right into it. We're going to talk about last week's incredible Lovecraft episode where we go back to Tulsa. You know, can you imagine in 2 years HBO managed to get 2 shows to handle and set in a Tulsa race riot? It's an amazing thing. It's a piece of history that had been long forgotten, and we got opportunities to see that twice. It's crazy.
If I had not have seen it, I would not believe it.
Right.
That's how crazy this shit is.
Right. So, yeah.
It's and beautiful. They tackled one of my favorite things to see in sci-fi horror, and that's the that's a successful time travel.
Yeah. They handle it very well.
Reinforcing time loop, yes.
Yeah.
We're going to get there.
Well, and it's... I don't know how else to call it. I appreciate when time travel can successfully implement the quote long con, the long con. What I mean by that is I like it was always going to happen that way. And they hit it that way that's what happened. And then they kind of go down that path as well.
There is a tiny loophole that, you know, I got to talk about. I'm going to let you cook. Go ahead.
We're, you know, just getting right into it. When you watch an episode and you're watching a good episode and that moment where it just kind of, you know, jumps over the, into the great episode was when, the look on, Montrose's face when he realized that Tick was the stranger with the bat and, he just did the, you know, I was like, oh yeah, see that's the good stuff right there.
I'm gonna stop that. I'm come back a little bit. I'm not gonna stop, but we're gonna have to get back to that part because there are so many fucking notes to this that.
Oh no. I know.
I'm not trying to downplay it, but I am trying
No. You don't understand. Damon is schoolboy Q on this shit. He got notes. He got cliff notes. Notes. He got like. Charts and shit. Like, this is real. He Ross Perot up in this motherfucker.
Oh,
like,
shit. Well, if you look over here now. So, number one, we started with fucking Cruel Summer to open with the Till open casket. And they didn't miss a fucking beat on that shit.
Not a beat. Yo, if we haven't done it yet, we really need to shout out the music direction because these cats are on it.
They got it all. They got every last bit of it, man.
So you were talking to me about the historical beats that they hit for like hit the nail on the head. Why don't you like tell the people that?
So there's a number of different parts here. So when we go back to Tulsa, right? One of the biggest issues that we come to find out is that this was one of the larger economic centers for Black prosperity, right? This was the part of a systematic destruction of Black economic and social power base. But to see it from other directions, it's just genuinely amazing. But what we see when the story gets honed in on the people that we have followed through this journey, we're watching Montrose. Tone and I talked about his journey a lot last night, where we watched his moment where he had to give up, and he made a decision at an incredibly young age.
Too young an age.
But to be able to save himself, the first boy he ever had a crush on, his best friend, in order to save himself, he called him the F word and tried to distance himself. This is the moment when Tick shows up.
Yep.
This is the moment, you know, we're talking about, you know, the way we think about time travel is basically based on Back to the Future, right? Undoing some shit that would stop the reality that we currently have from ever happening. But in reality, what you're going to do is what's going to make you do to get us to this point. So there's all these different theories, whatever. But Tick, you know, he's always had this thing in his mind. His dad has always talked about, you know, a stranger coming out of nowhere and saying, "I got you, kid," swinging a bat like Jackie Robinson. And to realize that his son was the man who saved him as a child. That's amazing.
It is amazing.
Right.
Well, and think about that very first scene that we get where Jackie Robinson cuts an alien in half with a bat, but yet is still killed by that alien after it reforms behind him.
Yep.
Like, I mean, they gave that they what they did here, and I think it's important that we talk about the last episode. Well, we're not quite there yet, but.
Right.
No, you can mention it. It's the title of the last episode. It's Full Circle.
Full Circle.
That's what it is.
All I'm saying is, you know, there are shows that will not be named because I've let that go, and my therapist has talked to me about that. That talk about having a plan and it doesn't really work out. And then there are shows like this that show improve, that show you everything you need to know within the first 5 minutes of the show. And then they expand and contract. This series expanded, and then it contracted exactly right back to that last thing. What did we see? We saw aliens. Check. We saw Jamie Chung as this exotic, not quite. We don't really know what she is. Yeah. Check.
Mm-hmm.
We saw the mysterious stranger wrecking shop with a bat. Check. And then we saw him succeed in saving people and yet still be consumed himself.
Check.
Yeah. We saw everything we needed to know about this series within the first 5 minutes.
Yep.
It was all about filling in the blanks. This is masterful, stellar storytelling, folks. Like, this don't happen every day.
Yep. Yeah, the dream was it. You know, even when you get saved, you're still consumed.
Yeah, prophecy. Man, this is the story old as time. This is prophecy right here.
Yep. So, well, the shit was absolutely incredible. And the finding the end journey between Montrose and Tick in these last two episodes was such a beautiful thing, where Tick finally understands the sacrifice that Montrose has been making his entire life from that moment of what he had to do to be his father. It doesn't absolve him of what he put Tick through and the trauma and the pain and the
poor decisions.
But it does give you a little bit of ideas about why him just being a halfway decent dude was so difficult for him.
Yep.
Right. Tone, you and I mean, we went back and forth this yesterday, so jump in.
I have hell of a memory, and there is a quote that I had to use my outer brain. Google found it. So there's this wonderful quote by Gregory Boyle that says, "Here is what we seek: a compassion that can stand in awe at what the poor have to carry, rather than stand in judgment at how they carry it."
Mm.
And that is what we see in Montrose. You know, a man who has sacrificed repeatedly over and over and over again to be the only thing he ever wanted to be by his own admission, which is Tick's father. And so this is the weight that he has carried. And I think this is the challenge that we as viewers have to make. You know, this is the challenge that we must meet. We have to stand in awe of the weight that he has carried, and yet somehow try to avoid standing in judgment of how he has carried it. Yep. Because, you know, I think we can all say it hasn't been pretty.
Nope.
You know what I mean? It has not been pretty. But had he not done what he did, we wouldn't have a Tick. And if we don't have a Tick, we don't have what Tick does. And mm-hmm. if we go back to the future reference, perhaps everything that Montrose put Tick through is the kind of steel sharpened steel. I don't want to use that reference because that implies something plan. Else. But
that,
what
that,
I would
that implies plan.
Yes, but what I will say is hardening.
Yeah.
Perhaps we don't have someone quite so hardened to make the kind of choices that Tick makes.
Yep.
Perhaps we don't have someone as strong to make the kind of choices that Tick makes. So
we don't call it a full hearty extent.
But that plays into why what I'm calling the long con. That's why it's perfect.
Mm-hmm.
That's why it's perfect the way it is. It was perfectly executed. Everything worked out exactly as it should. You know, often a story in whether it be a TV or a movie, whatever, can kind of botch time travel. I mean, you know, depending on your view, I mean, Avengers Endgame damn near botches time travel. Even though the movie's so enjoyable, it's very different from the time travel we're used to. This one falls
that's
into
not really Avengers Endgame is like it's time travel plus. You know what I mean? Like there's something else going on there.
Yeah, sure, sure.
Don't get caught up on that. Don't stop that. You know, the story, right? And also the canvas that Misha Green is painting on, and the picture that Misha Green and the rest of the writers and these incredibly talented actors. Michael K. Williams, man, like this dude is Montrose. I feel his pain week after week.
The penultimate episode was his. That was his episode. Yes,
that was his magnum opus of
it. No, it was holy shit. I mean, and again, like at some point, has he won any award?
I don't know, man. But he needs.
I don't feel like he has, and I feel like he needs all of them at this point. Like
everybody needs it at this point.
He's so good.
He's so good in adding more depth to the relationship between Tick and Montrose. Like you knew it was complicated, but to never truly understand just how complicated, but to have Tick gain that understanding at the same time that the audience does.
Right.
Was really important and very, very cool.
It was necessary.
It was absolutely necessary. And I like that. But one of the bigger things that we also recognize is that Hippolyta now understands the way the world works in ways that we don't truly understand. And yet here we are. You know, Hippolyta is like, I don't need a time machine. Y'all got me. I can power it myself. Like, that's amazing. That piece of sci-fi.
But that shit threw me for that threw me for a loop, dude.
It did. And one of the things you'll recognize is over the course of the season, we've moved away from horror and gotten pretty firmly into sci-fi history.
Well, what I think we're looking at is an all genre story where we're getting sci-fi and fantasy and horror and alternate history all jumbled up together in one, which would typically make some sort of disgusting Grand Milan, some kind of like gross mess. But in this case, just makes us a good old fashioned gumbo. The roux
is amazing.
Cooking and it's all good. And this, again, I have to take my hat off to Ms. Green, to Miss, I don't know what her situation is. I don't really care. It's not necessary. Whatever honorific I can give upon this this woman, I want to give it to her because if we stick on the cooking metaphor, this woman has put her foot all up in this gumbo.
Oh yeah, it is
the real deal.
Yeah,
it is the real deal.
Yeah, this shit's incredible. But where we leave off is that we find the book. We go back in history, and Letty goes and gets the book and.
To another great long con. I mean, it was always going to happen that way. That's just how it was going
to
be.
Always. Always.
To Ryan's older point. Remember when Ryan talked about everybody being connected here?
He sure enough did.
He was fucking right from the very beginning. Very beginning. Where are we at?
Oh, yeah.
We got the smooth jazz. I am sorry.
Tony got the smooth jazz going. You got a whole bunch of shit popping.
Yeah. Well, sorry.
Are we holding you from something, brother?
No, we good. We are good. Not almost. Going back to those days. No, I'm good.
Right. Right. But yeah, as we finished last week's episode. We recognize that they do manage to get information to save Dee. But she doesn't get saved until this week. And she's not all the way saved. Her arm is still jigabooed up. And it's fucking...
Oh, sorry. I like jigaboo is a verb for fucking something up. That's good. I like that.
Jigabooed up.
It works so good in so many different ways. I love this.
So then we get into some really difficult stuff. We start to recognize that we see a scene played out between Letty and Ruby in the cemetery. And it was
fucking real.
It was. But to hear Ruby basically Cuban be all of it, be like, this shit seemed like the same to me. I know this shit's big for you. This is the same old you. That shit hit hard as fuck.
That was ice cold.
And I looked for the lie. But
couldn't find that motherfucker.
I mean, I looked real hard. I really did. I turned over some rocks and shit and everything. I couldn't find that joint, though.
There were no lies, though.
No. And, goddamn. I mean, it reminds us that, like, Letty ain't shit neither. Victoria ain't shit, but Letty ain't shit neither.
Right.
And then it also, and now I'm thinking about that, and it also humanizes Ruby's choices, because when your family ain't shit, it's a little easier to not see other people who ain't shit. You know what I mean? Like Christina, Victoria ain't shit, Super Karen, however you want to call her. She got AKAs in this motherfucker, like she gang banging, and that's cool because she is. But
she gang banging for herself.
Yeah. I mean, but she is treated Ruby poorly. And I think we can all say that safely. But in master manipulator style, she's done so in such a manner that Ruby doesn't quite get it, or it's because of what she's dealt with at home. It's better than that. You know, like if you eat shit at home and a motherfucker feeds you sardine sandwiches.
Right. Sardine tastes good than a motherfucker.
Right. I mean, and that's a bad example because I actually like sardine sandwiches. We ain't going to talk about that.
Motherfucker, that's military and being poor black. Like,
I'm saying the sardine sandwich is a mustard, man. That's a good meal, but we ain't going to talk about that right now.
Not anymore. We make enough. We ain't never got to go back to that.
No, I'm not eating that now. I'm just saying it's a memory.
You got a little motherfucking... A little fucking 10-foot key to pull
up. Oh no, not the back. Key. You don't know nothing about that key. Stop it.
Look, you know I know. Don't play with me.
I'm just saying them joints was good. But all that aside, her home life was so shitty that Victoria offering her like the slightest bit of like being the slight bit honest and the slight bit like this is what I can do for you and this is what I can, etc. Like just laying shit on the line.
Yeah, honesty.
It felt like honesty to Ruby, when in reality, you know, we all saw that it was not.
Yeah, she's being used. But there is something that I wanted to keep in mind. We're spoiling all this shit, so if you haven't seen this,
spoiling the shit. Stop.
So we talked about this. There was a moment where Super Karen rolls up into the Green Book Travel Agency and basically tells everybody, "Look, man, we killed this motherfucker, but I'm not doing that shit. It's not personal. I just gotta kill you so I can become invincible and immortal and live forever." It's like, hold up, motherfucker. Like, do you genuinely believe that all of this shit, like just killing me is that's not worth anything? He's like, it's not a race war. It's not personal. I just need you so I can become immortal.
I think, though, if we look at it through the lens, and there are so many commonalities here that I do not believe for a second that Ms. Misha Green did not set up this whole fucking series.
Oh, there's no coincidence.
Say what now?
There's no coincidence.
No. She set this whole thing up as an allegory for the black experience in America.
Yes.
And, you know, there's a very old stereotype, a very old wives' tale about black folks not caring for their young. And that's why it's okay to take a newborn baby from a black mother and sell it to someone else. Because we don't really like our kids the way white folks like our kids. And so that's why Karen was able to, Super Karen, Victoria ain't shit, Christina, whatever you want to call it, was able to walk up in, you know, this safe haven. She walked up in their home, basically, and said, yeah, I'm going to kill that motherfucker. You grew up with him. You love him. He's your son. He's your uncle and nephew and all that other shit. But yeah, I'm going to kill him, but don't trip. It's not personal. That's why she was able to make that argument with a straight face. Because we don't care about our people the way that they do.
Look, I mean, I think it's an allegory of something even larger that we talked about last night.
If you want to get your full Bill Burr on, we could do that.
Let's do it. I'm ready. Let's do it right now. Let's dive in.
Let's do it.
Okay, all right. So go ahead, Tom. Start it off. Scott, follow us. Okay. Follow us here.
I'm listening.
Yeah, Scott, buckle up, motherfucker. Hold on to your butt. We about to move. We about to move. So, like, once upon a
time. Get your Bill Burr on.
That's it.
No, we doing it. So, like, once upon a time, a young cat named Tony, actually I was named Anthony back then, asked my mother, who was a Black Panther, grew up in the 60s, "Hey, Mom, would you consider yourself a feminist?" And she said, "No, because... during that time, I didn't." Actually, I'm not even going to clean that shit up. I'm just going to tell her. I'm just going to tell y'all what she told me. She said, "I didn't feel like that was for me. I didn't feel that I could be all of me in the movement."
Yep.
And I didn't really get what that meant at that point. And later on, you know, as we come into discussions about intersectional feminism versus quote unquote white feminism, you know. Did I at that point understand? And to Mr. Burr's point on SNL, we're not going to break down, like, really what Bill Burr did was give you a year's worth of, like, feminist theory and, like, first wave versus second wave versus third wave versus the wave we're in right now. Like, I know all this shit. Don't blame me. Like, he gave y'all all that shit in, like, a really short little jokey form that was successful and funny. But the idea that you can beat a structural system by merely changing the players in the system. So if we have a system with a hierarchy and you have player 1, 2, 3, and 4, and you're going to beat the system by replacing player 2 with player 1. So now player 2 is on top, player 1's beneath player 2.
Look, you know, to break this shit down even more, she had no want to destroy the system. She just wanted to jump the fucking line. And she was willing to use black people's pain. She was willing to use black people's bodies, their physical body, to
their labor, their effort,
their system, like their bone structure, their blood, their essence, to jump to the head of the line.
Absolutely.
And that, for anybody who's not paying attention, is what people have long accused white feminism of doing.
Right. You don't want to change the system. You just want to fix your place in the system.
Correct.
Which is not successful.
Right.
You know, and actually, if we can take a step forward. We can call that Orwellian. We can talk about Animal Farm.
Tie that shit, but tie it straight to Bill Burr. This motherfucker said, look, you have jumped right into the front of the line of the struggle. Black folks, wokeness, all this other shit is happening. Y'all motherfuckers jump right in line like, but what about us, though? And then pushed everybody else back.
Right. And to his point, and the God damn it, if he didn't play it masterfully. You know, he said, you know, and I love this. Sit down and take your talking to.
Yeah.
You know, like, you need to, like, sit down and realize where you are at in this struggle. And, like, accept that you're complicit in this shit.
Yep.
Sure, you didn't do all the terrible things that white males did, but you were, like, you were my Ace Boon Coon. You know, we were hand-in-hand doing this shit together. So, like, you know, I don't know what kind of sympathy you want from me in this joint. And that's a real thing. And this is pretty much exactly what Super Karen was doing this whole season. She's like, She didn't want to break the system because she could have done that. She could have said, look, second place is the first loser. I'm a loser just like the rest of y'all. Fuck this system. We're going to break this whole motherfucker down and start over. That's not what she wanted to do. She said, this system is great for maintaining power for those at the top. The problem is that I'm not at the top, so I'm just going to get at the top. And I'm going to use all y'all motherfuckers at the bottom. I'm going to Khaleesi this shit. Yes, I did say that, and that is real. I'm going to Khaleesi this shit. I'm going to use y'all brown and black motherfuckers at the bottom to get to the top.
Yep.
The only difference is that Khaleesi at least had the fucking decency to promise them black and brown folks at the bottom that she was going to do something for them.
Yep.
Super Karen never did that shit. She never once said, I'm going to do this for you when I get here. She just said, I'm going to get here.
No, I mean, she promised that I'm going to just leave y'all alone. That was literally the only thing she promised.
Which, if you're not a history buff, you might not catch that. But that Woodrow Wilson right there, that was literally the campaign speech that Woodrow Wilson gave to get to the presidency. And black folks voted for him in numbers.
Droves.
He was a hero in the black community. So much so that my grandfather's name is fucking Woodrow. Like, people named their kids after this motherfucker. And all he promised was that I'm not going to help you and I'm not going to hurt you.
I'm not coming after y'all. And at that point, you know, that was more than enough. Just to have a motherfucker leave you alone.
And by the way, if y'all need, like, a moral to the story, that was a lie.
Right.
That was a lie.
The whole thing's a lie. But, you know, Super Karen ran up in here and we see Ruby deal with the weight of making this decision. Do I rep my sister, or do I talk to this woman who has shown me affection, who shown me the first sense of personal love that I've known that didn't really have a whole lot of strings to it? And, or so she thought. And she went with that shit.
That's a conversation we can have about colorism in the Black community.
Yep.
About how we, through oppressor worship, treat some of our own so poorly that we leave them susceptible to being picked off by people who don't really have their best interests at heart.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of times where light skin and good hair, you know, back to one of the original arguments of colorism within the Black community, good hair.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that those kids generally just have a better, easier life within the Black community, and even some within the white community, because that was the idea. If you were good enough, you could pass. And there was just a lot of shit that came from that.
Yeah, the paper bag test. Yeah. Look, I'm just curious. Scott, do you know about the paper bag test?
I was gonna say I could take a stab at it, but
take a stab at it. No, take a stab at it. It's pretty clear. I think you got it.
What I mean, like you know, somebody's wearing a paper bag and just an axe who they. Let me see. Hold on. I'm not even like drunk or anything. So let me hold on. Let me sit up here and get a good answer. The paper bag test, I would say, is. You don't know who someone is if they're wearing a paper bag.
Scott, honestly, your answer is so innocent and cute. It just makes me love you more. It really does.
Yeah.
It really does, Scott. Yep. So the paper bag test is. okay, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I'm going to ruin your whole life now, Scott.
That was such an innocent response, man.
It was so beautiful, David. Did you not hear that shit?
Like, number one, shout out to your parents, man. They raised you.
Yo, your parents raised a real one. I love your parents, man. Yeah. Shout out to your parents, man.
God damn.
The paper bag test is this. You want a job that makes any kind of real money, or if you want to be on TV, or if you want to be anywhere where someone has to see you, they hold a paper bag up to your face or your hand, and if you are lighter than the paper bag or the same color as the paper bag, then you get the job. If you're darker than the paper bag,
it's a wrap.
You don't. That's the paper bag test.
Oh, okay. I mean,
that's how deep colorism goes.
Yeah, no, it's real. It's real.
I believe you. I believe that it's real. I'm just. Okay.
I mean, I've never heard it
described to me that way.
Yeah.
You don't have to believe it. I mean, you know, you don't have to believe in Freddie either. That motherfucker's still gonna rip your asshole off. But I mean, it is.
Yeah. But one of the biggest things that you see from here is like, within this moment, right? We recognize that you're met with two choices, right? And Ruby is forced to make that choice. Between family or Super Karen. And at the moment, you know, Super Karen asked her, have you ever? And all of a sudden it started to get hot and heavy. I said, oh shit, you love to see it.
I was not ready for that.
Look, you know, non-binary, cuz we all over this motherfucker.
Yo, I mean, it's good, but like, we have this conversation, Damon, and I would love to get into this with you and Scott as well. So, and I just got to ask a question, because Damon is, as far as I understand it, believes that the relationship was complicated.
Yes.
That Super Karen did care for Ruby.
Yes.
But she wasn't going to let it get in the way of her feelings, which now right. I think about it is akin to what I said on the previous podcast, where like, I love my dogs. But if my dog scratched my kids, I'm going to kill that motherfucker. And it is what it is.
Well, that motherfucker played out just like that, didn't it?
I mean, it did. It did. You know what I'm saying? And then there's the idea that Super Karen had been manipulating Ruby all along, which I believe to be true.
Yep.
What say you, Scott?
Well, your dog analogy, I think, makes the most sense. I probably would have said that she did have genuine affection for her at first, but given that, you know, kind of the what happened to Ruby, I think that your analogy
God,
with
don't be politic. We spoiling this shit.
I would say that she did have some affection for her unless she got in her way. And when she got in her way, she took her out.
So
and that's exactly what happened.
So here's what I say. I think the affection is real, regardless of what her actions were. You know, I think the affection was real because even after she threw fucking Letty out of the goddamn window, she gave her the vulnerability back.
Yeah,
out of the promise that she made to Ruby.
But I also don't think. Okay, so here's the deal. So in economics, we talk about a principle called opportunity cost, right?
Yep.
So it's like what you spend is not just what you spend, but it's like
what you could be also spending it on. Yep.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I think that in her arrogance, she felt she had this locked up. So it cost me nothing to keep this promise to Ruby. You know what I mean?
Sure.
So I'm gonna keep this promise to Ruby. Now that's not to say that she don't have some kind of like affinity for Ruby, because I believe that's true. I believe that's true. But I do believe we're still talking about, you know, we're still talking about old Yeller.
You know, yeah, I mean it's Ruby affection to what end?
Old Mahogany. You know what I'm saying?
Right, right. Old Mahogany to what end? The affection is to what end, right?
Right.
And we saw to what end it was. The hand-to-hand Jean-Claude Van Damme in the motherfucking bell tower, and, you know.
Which was a good fight scene, and also very fucking metaphorical.
Yeah.
Like,
but Super Tabitha almost got killed.
Fighting against light-skinned black folks, or let's just keep it a buck. Dark-skinned people of color versus light-skinned people of color fighting as proxies for rich white folks, which is what really happened.
Right.
You know, like...
What are we fighting for?
Yeah. Miss Green is not fucking playing with y'all. She coming for all of it.
She put that shit right on top of you.
Oh, yeah. It's heavy as a motherfucker.
The little moments that stood out to me, I'm going to ask...
Damon, no, you got while we're here, you got to talk about it because you ruined my whole fucking day with this shit, Dan.
Yep.
I didn't see this.
Yep.
It fucked up my whole day.
Yep.
So we got to talk about it.
So during the scene when we all decide we got to go back to Artem, there is a moment when they're inside of the car and it is our entire Scooby gang and they are all singing and they are all having a great time. It is one
now,
of the,
what are they singing though, Damon?
Tell me what they're singing.
They're singing Life Could Be a Dream.
Life Could Be a Dream.
Which is also the song from Clue. Yeah. And y'all know I got a big hole in my heart for Tim Curry. Clue's my shit. Tell me your brother wasn't singing along with this shit. I was singing with these motherfuckers.
Look, when Tick came into baritone, I said, oh shit. Right.
Yeah, that's where I was singing. I was singing with these motherfuckers.
But the thing about all of that is that was not Ruby in the car. That was Super Karen. Victoria ain't shit. Christina the whole time. So in the single purest moment of happiness and enjoyment that this group has had since we joined their story, it's darkened because the interloper is there with them. And Tone, what was the line?
Did
she dropped about family?
Oh, so right before Letty realizes that Ruby isn't Ruby, but Ruby ain't shit. she says to her, I think I finally realize the appeal of family. And Letty at that point sort of kind of gets it, and she tests her. She fails the test, and then she really gets it. And it's like, there is, I mean, at this point, I don't really feel bad about putting my tinfoil hat on. You know what I'm saying? Because I feel like Ms. Green really got my back on this shit. But like, there's a story, and there's a line about people of color saying like, my culture is not a costume. You don't get to wear a ceremonial headdress at Coachella.
Yep.
You don't get to wear earrings.
Yep.
And like roll your neck and
door knockers.
Yeah,
you don't get to put on a kente cloth. You know, put your fist up, you kneel on the ground, Nancy Pelosi.
In Congress, yeah, you don't get to do that. Like, this is my life.
Yep.
It's not a costume change for
you. That's why there was so. People always ask, why is there so much vitriol for Vanilla Ice? Right. It's that thing because he wore his hood pass as second skin. But at any time, Rob Van Winkle could step out and be white.
Well, and if you want proof of concept, you can just look at Miley Cyrus.
Right.
I mean, she out there doing the whole thing. She's twerking her little chicken meat, you know, on national TV. I mean, it was man.
Chicken cutlet, boy.
I know a chicken cutlet when I see one. I mean, it is what it is, bro.
Yeah, that cutlet not sexy. That shit unseasoned like a motherfucker.
Yeah, she can twerk that boiled chicken meat all she wants. Boiled. I mean, that's what it is.
That shit ain't had no seasoning, boy.
She can denounce hip hop and say that it was just too negative.
When as soon as it suits you, you know.
After she made all that money, you know what I'm saying? Like, this is what it is. Like, this isn't. I mean, look. I mean, I could talk about Miley Cyrus,
Yeah, we're going to get off of Miley.
You know what I'm saying? I could talk about Justin Timberlake, or I cannot. I mean, I could talk about John Mayer, or I cannot. I mean, I could keep going. How far you want me to take this?
Hey,
you know what I'm saying?
John Mayer can play the motherfucking guitar. But, you know, another thing that I was starting to, you start to see is, Jamie Chung's character comes back and Tick apologizes to her for the way he treated her. And it was nice to see that, you know, because it was at this point, anyone who's paid attention to the show recognizes where this is going to end up because Tick is now righting all his wrongs.
Right. Now, my question to you is that growth or is that who Tick is and he was caught off guard?
Oh, no. I think it is very clearly that he's growing. You know, the idea was he wanted to be a savior because he thought that he could change things. This is a man who has recognized what this now is and that regardless of what he wants, there is no changing the outcome. The entire time he was, he was talking about all of this with the idea that he could change where this would end up. At this point, he recognizes that there's no way to change the outcome of this. This is where you have to do it. So that's it. Scott, jump in, man.
Oh, I don't watch the show I don't get as much. I know from watching as you guys do. I'm watching it more from the entertainment part, and then I catch this, and I'm like, my mind's blown even more. It gives it rewatchability for me too, so I appreciate that. I looked at,
watch nothing else, Scott, rewatch that scene of them in the car and see how tepidly Ruby
joins in. So I want to hit on
her correctly, there. She's got the better voice than Letty does. So watch her tepidly join in and then watch her be so happy while she's singing.
Yeah.
There's some real shit there.
So let me ask you, when the reveal happens that she's Ruby, now is that shocking to you? Were you shocked that that was her?
It's tricky because I was surprised, but something about either the direction or the music cues or like, I don't think that they were trying to kill us with that surprise. You know what I mean?
No.
When it happened, I was ready for it, I guess is the best way to say it.
And so that, and I, so I agree. I shocked is not the right word. It does catch you by surprise, but it's kind of like, oh, okay. Yep. That makes sense. Now I get it now. And I'll add to that too. And you know, I'm assuming we'll, you know, we're going to get to the end and then where it goes from there. But that, because we didn't see Ruby die, I do not think she's dead.
Well, she's either in the same state that.
Correct.
You know
that.
So she's.
No, that's something I had not considered.
She's just a body in a comatose state, being drained from her blood.
Correct.
In a basement in Chicago.
Right.
But Victoria ain't shit is gone.
You know, it's an interesting point that, you know, that.
Well, we never actually see her die.
No, I mean,
we're told she's dead. We're told she's dead. She's not. I mean, I would, you know, we know from watching a lot of TV and movies, if you don't see a death, it didn't happen.
Yeah.
No, Scott, I think we got something for real there. I think you really do. I think it's an interesting point that, you know, due to the internecine fight that Black folks have, i.e. colorism, paper bag test, all the shit we went over in the beginning of the cast, there will be a test, et cetera, et cetera, that it leaves some Black folks vulnerable to being hollowed out and used for the purposes of other people.
Husks.
You know, cough, cough, Candace Owens, cough, cough, anyway. So, like, there's some real vulnerabilities there that, you know, and to that point, should there be a season two, which I'm not convinced that there will be.
Absolutely. Yes. 100%.
No. I didn't say should there be as in a question, like, should there be, because there should be. I want to see it, but like, more as in like, if there were to be conditional statement, a season two, could that be a surprise they give us? Absolutely. But I'm not entirely convinced.
Look, on top of the fact that, you know, it took all the brown folks and Asian folks to come together to be one white woman.
We
had to get the Black Shoggoth in here, and the Black Shoggoth tore up all the white Shoggoths. Which was crazy. And
well, it was a nice, you know, but you know, the black one saving her from the white one was nice.
Saving D.
Yeah. Saving D in the car when she was reading the book Lovecraft Country.
Yep.
Well, thank God, because I feel like she's been through enough. True. She didn't need nothing else.
Well, and then the wild fucking final scene of her with a fucking robot arm.
Yep.
I mean, like, whoa. I didn't see that one coming either, but
yeah.
I mean, that was in that Hippolyta showing her whatever was in that room.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, again, something else. I mean, there's so much left on the table that they didn't reveal. That there's too much left on the table to not do.
Shout out to our folks at the Firestarter podcast who are live tweeting at the same time I was live tweeting. They caught that shit. That, wait a minute, bad right arm, black chick in the future with a robot arm. I wonder if that's D. They caught that.
Yep.
Wait, hold on. The girl that was talking to Hippolyta in that room.
Because remember, is that what you're talking about? You are not a prisoner.
Uh huh. Keep going, dude. Go on, Damon.
Oh, no. Okay, I didn't catch that at all.
Yeah.
Yeah. Think about it. Think about how circular this shit really is.
Yeah.
This is back to the future for real, bro.
This is like the kids saving their parents. Tick saved Montrose as a child, and now D saves Hippolyta as an adult to unlock all of the things that she needs to unlock to be able to then save her as a child.
And then think about what black people could do in the future if they have technology and magic. And then it makes sense.
Well, yeah, and the ending makes perfect sense now.
That someone's waiting for Hippolyta.
Well, think about it like this. Black folks have all the tools of time travel. They have all the tools of technology. They have all the tools of everything. Why? Because of this moment.
Right.
Where we not only defeat Super Karen because the 12-tailed fox goes and becomes one with the darkness, then everybody does their part. Yep. You know, Letty steps up after she figures out that her invulnerability, which Super Karen gave to her as her promise to Ruby.
Which is her undoing, too.
Yep.
Yep.
Yep. I mean, the piece here, the metaphor here is, you know, kindness to brown folks can be white women's undoing. Yeah, who knows, right? It's the one thing that'll stop you from being even.
I feel like we shouldn't have said that, but okay.
Right, right. It looks like it's going to turn cold than a bitch all of a sudden. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But we got to this point where not only did Letty come in and stop Super Karen, the biggest reveal was, what was it, Scott?
Oh, at the end when she's laying under the rock, that's what you're talking about?
Yeah.
Man, so that was the real kickoff to me of that you could keep this show going now for fucking 10 years, in my opinion, with the reveal of that not only did she remove Super Karen from ever using magic again, no white people, period, yes, can use magic again.
Yes.
And so I don't know. My brain at that point just kind of exploded a little bit. Yeah. I love, and this is what I've alluded to this all season, and I've always been intrigued by the story idea, any story idea that flips the white and black races upside down and has you view an entire history from the opposite direction.
Yeah.
And that is, I've kicked around story things, and I don't know how to make it work personally. You know, I'm not a writer. It's just an idea I've had. I just think that's an outstanding story idea. On now, black people have the ability to pretty much do whatever the hell they want. They can travel through time, go to different dimensions, rewrite history. I mean, that is such an intriguing story concept. There is entirely too much on the table for them to not go back us more.
But even to a base level, right? Let's take it, you know, just base before we do anything like moving into the future. They now have the power to change the system to make it work for them.
Well, but that's my point. That's exactly what I'm saying. Yes, exactly right. And why wouldn't they? I mean, what I mean is, you flip it on its head. Now, what does what does the government look like? What does public transportation look like? What are clothing trends look like? What do buildings look like? You know what I mean? Like
architecture, sure, yeah, all of it.
All of it, and that's what I'm talking about. You're absolutely right. I'm taking that and I'm running with it. I'm like, let's see all of it. I want to see all of it. I think that is, that's such an interesting concept that, and it's been untapped up until 2020. Like, how is that a thing? I mean, it's a shame that
white folks,
I know.
They're not trying to give us no ideas. Or wait a minute, hold on. This is what
that's
y'all
what I'm saying, man.
Uh-uh. They don't want us even envisioning in any way, shape, or form what this society would look like if they were on the other side of running this shit. Mm-mm.
So y'all just gonna forget that, like, White Man's Burden with John Travolta wasn't a thing. I mean, it to be fair, wasn't a thing. It was a terrible fucking flick. I was gonna say, so y'all just gonna pretend like White Man's Burden with John Travolta wasn't a thing?
Look, that's one little moment. This goes so much further than that. This is not the changing of society of what white people think black people would do. Because that's what that felt like, opposed to now changing society for what black people do, extrapolate from history, from culture, like what Scott was talking about before. Architecture looks different now. The things that we celebrate and are extrapolated forward through time now have a much more Afrocentric look. The nomenclature in which becomes accepted as normal is different. Every aspect of our society takes on a different turn.
I think if you're to do it accurately, if you're to do it truthfully, because we speak English, because we speak, you know, a language of anti-blackness, if you're to actually do it and do it right, the dialogue would be so unrecognizable, it might be unfollowable.
Yeah.
And like, I'm not trying to keep saying that nobody's, I love the idea. I'm just saying, I think there are real problems with it. But I think that it would be very interesting. I think that, you know, there's a couple ways to go about this. I think if we're going to continue on in the vein that we're in, I think what we do is we show that Super Karen had immortality and life, right? And the whole plan from the whole time by Super Karen's admission was to reverse her plan against her. So you use Tick's death to fuel Super Karen's life. And because, you know, she's got all the bells and whistles, you know, she becomes immortal. But she's also alive when this spell takes effect. This spell is reversed, but it's reversed after Tick's death. So he is now immortal and vulnerable, but he's also dead. So that makes him something else. So now perhaps they have to deal with the specter, the shell, the ghost of Tick in a different way as an after effect of what they did. I think that's season two in a nutshell, if that's what you want to do.
I'm not going there. I would just go, Ruby wakes up, and now she is on her, you know, she finds the husk of Super Karen, and she takes the Super Karen husk and takes that bitch for a spin.
Ooh, I like that. I like that. I like that. If I were to go one step further, and just so y'all know, like the fans know, but like, just let's make it clear, we deep in the woods of what would Get Out the Room do. So y'all know.
Yeah.
My idea is to take the best episodes and delve into them deeper. So like, let's say for instance, this is where we're at right now, right? We're reversed all the history. Black folks get all the magic, white folks get none of it, etc. But now we got all this magic, but we still don't know how to use it all. So now we got to get all this relics.
But we have the book, though.
We got the book, but now we got to get the relics. So now we have a season of, I don't know if you guys remember this, but, you know, Friday the 13th, the series.
Yep.
We have a book leading us to these relics. We blend a little bit of Raiders of the Lost Ark in there, because we don't have to like do some plunging and spelunking and some yada yada yada. So boom, now we got our Negroes of the Lost Ark season that was just a episode before. Cool. After we get these relics, we got to do some things. We help some black folks out because they need help. Now we got our haunted house ghost facers / supernaturals season. We run around helping people out. Boom. That's now we in season three.
And you going way further. I was just gonna go to.
Oh no, I'm not even done yet.
Before you go too much further, I was gonna say like season two. I thought we'd just get to a point where black folks are met with similar decisions on either destroying white culture, destroying white history.
Yes.
You know, just like those momentary decisions that then change like historical context forever. Like, do you leave out the fact that Jesus was brown, right? You know, you're sitting at a book recounting different theological texts. And the way this person chooses to interpret them is the way that the rest of the world will then hear it moving forward. So having a black person have to make that decision opposed to white folks who've always made that decision within our society I think that is a much more interesting look than going too much further down the supernatural world. But that's just me.
Well, no, but you could do both. You could certainly have you the overarching could. Story you be could. What you're saying. Absolutely,
that's true.
And then dive in, a thing here or there to have a subplot or something following, going back for the relics as well.
And now, Scott, I swear to God, we're right there. So this is what we're talking about. So for the last two seasons that I've just described. It can't go smoothly, right? So we're always going to have some friction. So we find out in season three that this friction is by a small sect of black folks who feel that this is too much power for black people to have, that they should not have it. And if they have it, that they're going to do the same thing to the world that white folks did, and they don't want that. So we have a segment of
black folks. Okay, I do like that.
Actively working against the other crew, and that comes to light in the third season that I'm describing, which would now be season four. That comes to light in season four, and then that's the battle. And then if we triumph over those people, now it's the okay. We've marshaled all our forces. Everybody's together. Now we need to bring the world together. And then at that point, because we've already brought in the idea of interdimensional travel and space travel. Now we have finally caught the attention of extraterrestrials. Now we have to battle against these motherfuckers. And that is the final test for us to get to the place where we have black peoples in space and being able to travel against interdimensions and all that other stuff. So that's the final test. By my count, that's season five. We can lay all that out. Five seasons. Done and done. Y'all might be listening. Y'all might not. I think y'all are. I just gave y'all motherfuckers a blueprint. So, have some fun.
I love every direction the show could go. I mean, one thing is, I remember when I first jumped into the show. I'm not sure what I expected. I liked the trailers, but, I was thinking it'd be a show I liked, I'll watch it. Sounds good. But now that we're here at the end of the season, like I said, it kind of reignited thoughts I've had of stories that I don't know how to tell them. Mrs. Green does know how to tell them and has done it very well. And I'm like, please keep going. I want to see more. I think, the very end. Going back to, I don't think Ruby's dead. I also don't, I think Tick is going to be around somehow, in the future. Whether he's a ghost, whether they bring him back to life. I mean, if they have magic, I'm assuming there's a way to bring him back somehow.
That's one of those kind of tricky rules with genre. Death is always final. We can keep you from dying. We can bring you back just after death.
But the trick is there too. Well, right, but we also know that stuff like that can be, if magic is if they really truly have the ability to do anything, why can't they do that too?
Yep.
Well, look, there's the idea that Tick, let's say the spell takes effect, right?
Yeah.
He's now immortal. He's invulnerable, but everybody's gone. He's read the story. He's read the book. He knows that he has to stay gone in order for things to happen the way he wants to happen. And this becomes part of his continued sacrifice, which now echoes Montrose's sacrifice.
Yeah.
Like, I have to hurt you in order for you to be the person that you have to be. And so we have parallel stories now. We have stories about Tick trying to, stay out of the limelight. And then, of course, I'm sure he's going to have a whole set of, powers and abilities that he's got to master. Mm-hmm. And that runs parallel to the story of Letty raising her son on her own and going and trying to master magic and put that into George as well. That could be done. I think the point that we're making here is that there are a multitude of avenues that this show could go. And we didn't get a second season for Watchmen.
And we're not going to.
And we're not going to. That's not going to happen. And frankly, Damon and I talked about this before. I'm not sure we're going to get a second season for this either.
Yeah, I don't think we are.
No, I don't think we are. But so, there are seasons for, there are places for it to
go. There are definitely places to go, but I look at this very similar to watching like the greatest hip hop albums of all time, where they, you've encapsulated their entire lives experiences up until this point. So they make these incredible first albums. But then right. in the next 7 months, you're expecting them to put out their next album, and it's almost always...
And they're literally exhausted.
And they're all like, and they're almost always disappointing because they don't have their entire second half of their life to pull from for experiences. So that's how I feel about this. Although Misha Green, if there's anybody who can prove me fucking wrong, she can do it. I mean, we just watched a whole season of masterful storytelling with incredibly impactful moments within Black culture, Black history, and American culture and American history.
And all looped in on each other. Like, you can tell the difference between someone who's writing a story as they go and someone who has written the story and tied it all together. And this was written, tied together with a triple, quadruple fucking knot. Like,
yeah, I mean, this should probably had a Kevin Feige board.
Oh, yeah, no. She look, man, again, if this is Gumbo, she broke her whole foot off in this motherfucker. Like, she really did. So, to do something like that, I have to think, just on execution alone, that she's able to do more.
Yeah, the ability's there. It's just whether or not she wants to. Because I'm positive HBO will want to do it.
I'm not sure. Absolutely. I'm not sure. See, that's where we differ. I'm not sure. Because if they were positive they wanted to do it, why not do it with Watchmen? The cast you have.
Well, so I think there's a difference there.
In a game, like, are you kidding me?
Watch, for as good as Watchmen was, and as much as I'm a comic book show and TV fan, I think Watchmen works more perfectly as a solo season than Lovecraft Country does, because I don't see as much coming out of that season of Watchmen. Don't get me wrong. I think you could do a second season if they could do it as well. I think there's too much left on the table, too many unanswered questions, too much story left to not dive into something more than Lovecraft.
Well, Lindahl said he didn't want to do it. So that's why I say that.
But again, even if Misha Green came out and said that too, I mean, I'm in disagreement with her.
I don't think the staff would do it unless she's doing it.
Oh, no, and nor should they.
I do not get the impression that she's not down. Like, I've been following her on Twitter. She seems, I get the impression that if they were like, hey, we want you to come back for season two, that she would come back. And that's based on.
I would be genuinely surprised. Genuinely surprised that they got another season out of this. The cast.
No, I don't think they're going to get another season. But my point is, I think that's coming from HBO. I don't think it's coming from Misha.
No. I mean, HBO likes prestige, man.
Is this really prestige, though?
This show is making waves in ways that most shows simply do not.
Couldn't we say the same thing for Watchmen?
Yeah. Watchmen won all the awards.
Okay. And are we getting a second season of that?
Yeah, because the creator doesn't want to do it. Not because they won't greenlight it.
Ah, so you think, okay, so you think this has got the secret sauce that Watchmen don't. You got a willing creator.
Yes. That's the only thing.
Okay. All
right. I view them very similarly.
But you just said you don't think we're going to get a second season, so why not?
I don't necessarily know if there's more story to be told in the same way. Again, I think if there is somebody who can prove me wrong, it's Misha Green. But I don't necessarily know if there is. We'll see. Well, real quick, this show is a bona fide 15 out of 10 for me.
We're not even. Don't even start with me, man.
Like this gets the stamp of approval. So this goes up on the mantle.
This is not. It's not just a stamp of approval. This is the trophy that goes up on the mantle. You know what I'm saying? Like, this is little Joey's, you know, first place tournament posting in soccer league. Like, this is the real deal. Like, this is the Heisman Trophy. It's all the things.
You know, it is all of it for me.
It's all the things.
Every little bit of it.
Scott,
so here's what I'm going to say. I'm going back to what we had said before. So I'm in agreement. I love the season. I would give it a 10 out of 10. I really enjoyed it, but I need more story. It's not over yet. Watchmen's complete. This is not complete.
I'm not sure I agree with you there. I'm not.
That's the only thing I'll say. It's not complete. They've opened a door that I want more of. I think there's more to tell, on many fronts, any front.
You gotta recognize those are two different things, though. You wanting more is not the same thing as they're not being as the story not being complete. You know what I'm saying?
Yes, you're absolutely right. And maybe that's what I'm misconstruing here. But I do feel as though there is more story to tell, personally. Maybe that's my personal opinion.
Frankly, Scott, I don't think you're misconstruing a goddamn thing. I think there's more story to tell. I think they should tell more story. I'm just not convinced we're going to get more story, which is kind of a goddamn travesty, because if we don't get, look, if I don't get to see nothing more than the continued, like, how do I not get to see the continued redeeming of Montrose by seeing him turn from the bitter, hard, rigid man that he was as he raised Tick into the soft, forgiving, welcoming grandfather that he can be to George? Like, I need to see that. You know what I'm saying? I need to see that, because Montrose done gone through, like, we didn't talk about this, but the last scene where Montrose just, like, wakes up out of nowhere and walks over to the altar and tries to pick Tick up, like, he doesn't realize that he's dead. Like, for those of you who've never really been through that, like, God bless you, I hope you never do, but, like, that's a real thing that people do. Like, their mind break for a second when they see their very, very loved ones dead, and they go, "No, that motherfucker's not dead. He's asleep. Like, come here. Wake up. Come on. Let's go." Like, that wasn't drama. That was real. That's something that someone really would go through. And it broke my heart in half. Like, I can't, and I have to talk about this, and Damon and I spoke about this earlier. Like, how many times in this series I have said, "Poor Montrose." Like, there has never been a character that has more of my sympathy, who also started with more of my "fuck that dude." Like, the dichotomy of, like, antipathy and sympathy inside this one dude, this one character, is fucking amazing. And they carry it, and it carries off in both ways. You know, like, there were characters in Breaking Bad, I forget the dude's name, Heisenberg, but I forget his real name, Walter White. There are characters in Walter White, like, where the sympathy doesn't quite pay off, but the antipathy does, but, and vice versa, depending on where you fall on the line. There are times when it doesn't work in both ways, but for Montrose, it absolutely works. Michael K. Williams needs to get all of the awards, the statues, the ribbons, give him the checks, like, all of it. Like, he killed it.
Yeah, I think so. You saying you need to see him become the grandfather? He gets his second chance.
I want that.
I feel like that's what the voiceover was for. You know, in terms of there's more story, there could be, but I feel like this was a very complete story.
You know, this was a more complete story than Watchmen was for real.
I agree.
So if we don't get a second, if we get nothing more from this, like, I'm fine with that, because right. I think they've told the story that they need to tell. And, you know, and truth be told, if white people are bound from magic, there isn't anywhere else we can go other than what I ironed out before, where there's a faction of black people who are not cool with that and actively work against our Scooby gang, which I think could honestly fucking happen.
Yeah, started with Ruby. Ruby's a ringleader, right?
Yeah.
But, I mean, they could be like the Samuel Jackson's character in Django.
You know, it could be either way. It could be, look, they could be Uncle Ruckus's, you know what I'm saying? And they could also be on some Martin Luther King Jr. shit where it's like, I don't want to do to them what they did to us. Like, this isn't who we are. We need to
But that goes back to my earlier point of, you know, showing them make that decision.
Right. Which is why I said it correlates into, you know, what I was talking about before. Like, I think you could do it either way. But if we never get another episode of Lovecraft Country, I can't say that this shit is incomplete. Whereas I wouldn't say the same thing about The Watchmen. Like, The Watchmen is incomplete, but I'm not unsatisfied. This shit is complete. I'm satisfied. It's good. But God damn it if I don't want some more.
Yep, I agree.
I felt the opposite on those shows.
Also, you're completely fine with Watchmen.
Yes.
Going away.
Yes.
But you, oh wow, that's funny.
I'm sorry.
I said, I mean, I know you're a big fan of the comic. You're a big fan of
that's what I was trying to describe in me saying how much I like this show. My opinion of it has changed so much with each episode, with each passing discussion, with each week, with each. It's not complete. I think there's so much left on the table that it would be travesty to not continue it. Where with Watchmen, not continuing it, I'm perfectly fine with. Watchmen was always meant to be, to me, it was always meant to be the graphic novel that it was. And then when they come up with a story like they did, cool. It works. It's another one-off type story to me. You know, it's just a continuation of what I had already read and enjoyed. And if it stops there, cool. This one seems like the beginning of something much, much grander. And that's what, and again, maybe I am misconstruing it with what I really want to see, but I think there's too much left, and I really hope we see more. I think the stories they can tell from here are endless. I think it's endless.
We'll see.
I think before we close this out, we gotta we've spoken about how very clear Miss Green's vision here is and how complete she's woven this story, right? And I think there's a very real river of black male sacrifice so that black women and then the next generation of black men can succeed.
I mean, look, the revolution is led by black women. I think that's the overarching story of all this shit.
Yeah, yeah, and I think what she's trying to talk about is, I mean, and, you know, if you look at this from a martial aspect, and by martial I mean war, like in any, you know, unit, be they soldiers or marines or sailors. Let's just take sailors to the, you know, point of excellence. Anyway, let's just leave it there for a second. But
you ain't shit.
I'm not even a little bit, and I never pretended to be otherwise.
Goddamn.
But if we do that for just a fucking second, you know what I'm saying? Like, there are frontline people, and then there are generals. And the generals don't get to do what they do if the frontline folks don't show up, and vice versa.
Yep.
You know? And I think the point that she is making, which is an anthropological point, frankly, you know, you need less men in the tribe to make more people than you need women. That's just genetics. And that, you know, the role of men is, you know, to be the protectors, the shield, the sacrifice, so that the next generation goes on, of course, with the women, which would put the women in the civilian leadership role. And that seems perfectly logical and also incredibly revolutionary all at the same time. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no. I mean, listen to the women, man. Yeah. If she's happy, we's happy. So,
you
just go keep
happy,
it right
happy
there.
Wife, happy life.
Exactly. It's all.
I mean, you can, look, you can talk. Merle Haggard already told you, man. Mama tried. Like whatever mistakes I made,
yep.
Mama tried.
That's it.
True words were never spoken, man.
So shout out to Lovecraft Country. This is a generational piece of work. Misha Green, shout out. Journey. Bro,
shout out to Miss, yes.
Jonathan Majors, shout out. Michael K. Williams, shout out. Andre New Ellis, shout out.
Well, hey, and yes. We'll be seeing more.
Yeah, yes. I hope so. I mean, we'll meet.
We will.
I hope I see more of her. You know, there was so much that was right here. And
can we get a shout out for Victoria and shit though?
I've been holding off on her.
No, don't do it. Because
her teeth bother me. But she be dressed. Her fits are impeccable. And I must say, her acting fucking surprised me. After she allowed herself to be killed in the same way Emmett Till was killed, and then in the moments when she tried to switch up and ask for help, you know, like so many other motherfuckers through history, we willing to take your life at any moment. You know, your life is inconsequential as long as I get what I want. But then when I fuck around and fall, please help me. Please help me. But Victoria, you know, she was fantastic. She was really, really a strong actress, and I enjoyed her all season long. She was great.
I do not believe
there was a single bad casting choice in this entire.
No. And this honestly is the kind of show that would have fell apart if it did not have the right foil, and she was perfect.
She was perfect. She was. I mean, she looked the part. And she's a strong actress, much more so than I thought she was going to.
Agreed.
So
flat out.
Anything else before we move on to The Boys? Guess not.
Mm-mm. We good.
So yeah. Oh, her name is Abby Lee Kershaw.
Abby Lee Kershaw. Yeah, middle name of Lee as a white scream queen. You know, I mean, it is what it is, yo.
Yeah.
Woman was destined for greatness.
Yep. Shout out to Jamie Chung, who also surprised me this year.
Yes, absolutely.
Oh, yeah. Wait. Speaking of that, I'm glad you brought that up. One last thing. I said this a week or two ago, how I wanted to see her true form. I still think it was going to come out, and it didn't. So I was disappointed by that.
The nine-tailed fox?
Yeah, I wanted to see some nine-tailed fox, like, on the bridge when they were fighting all those people. I was just like, oh, yeah, we're going to get to see her, and then we didn't. I mean, I kept thinking that we would.
They was taking Children of the Corn motherfuckers out, though. They went hard as fuck.
Oh, yeah.
They went hard. Yo, that was the best scene ever. You know, you intersplice dark-skinned black folks versus light-skinned white folks light-skinned black folks with poor white folks versus regular black folks all at once fighting over some rich motherfucker that don't give a shit about none of them. That was fucking beautiful. Miss Green, she's not playing, man. She's not playing.
Her pen's stronger than a motherfucker.
No, she ain't playing at all.
So, yeah, beautiful. We will miss it. I will miss looking forward to something like this every week.
No. And y'all know us. Like, it's going to take a lot to get us to, like, show up every week.
Yeah.
Like, yo, we got to talk about this shit. We got to talk to the people.
Yeah.
Like, that's how important this shit is.
Yeah,
think about all the shows we didn't cover, y'all. This is the one that got us, that got our shit together.
Most of them weren't nearly this good.
No. This was something special. It really was.
Yep. So, next up, we will say adieu to Lovecraft and roll right into The Boys finale, which was
wild as well.
Wild as fuck.
Wonderful, cathartic. Like, it was just what I needed, motherfucker.
It was everything we thought it was going to be.
Oh, my God.
Stormfront was exactly who we thought she was.
Yep.
Not a doubt.
So I read an interesting, so we've been spoiling this too, and to tie into what we were talking about, the end of Lovecraft, I read an article with, I think it was the showrunner. I don't even know who the showrunner is offhand, but what their name is for The Boys. But
yeah,
they asked or implied that Stormfront was not even dead.
Yeah, I mean, she wasn't dead. She was just, she lost all of her limbs.
Well, I was going to say,
she had her hair burned off.
Anything could happen with that. Yep.
But, you know, her limbs were gone. Her arms and legs were burned off, but she was still alive. She was just talking in German.
Which was that was a really creepy scene, too.
Yeah.
Of her laying there speaking like that.
Yeah. It was, oof.
So what's creepier, her laying there limbless and like half burnt, talking to German, or Homelander whacking off on top of a building looking at the city?
Not being able to get it out.
Right.
Not sure. That shit was terrible.
And so apparently that scene was the only scene they cut from season one. The Homelander on the building.
That's funny.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's really funny. But Scott, take us through a little bit of the Boys finale.
Well, a lot of this has to do with this is Billy Butcher kind of still dealing with his wife, he ultimately cuts a deal to give them the boy, but then kind of goes back on it as well. It's really a big Billy Butcher centered episode where he's kind of, he shows kind of who he is on two different fronts, you know.
Yep.
He's the family man he always is, but he also is ultimately still looking out for himself kind of simultaneously. It's kind of he's an interesting character, kind of like a character study that they kind of focus on with his storyline. But ultimately, you know, he does choose to side with his wife, who ultimately, tragically, is the main victim of the episode, thanks to her superpowered son that everybody seems to want to have and control. And he's kind of the new centerpiece for where, you know, I suppose they'll go here in the future. Satisfying ending. I enjoyed the season. I have no idea how they're going to be able to hold back Homelander from hunting down the boys. I don't know how that's going to be, why he would do that. I know that that video exists, but it seems like he could just take care of that pretty easily.
I don't know, man. Yeah, I think there is something to be said about the power of perception, right? Because recognizing that the boys lives in a universe where public perception, even down to their popularity points, matters so much.
So much, yeah.
And this would cripple the public's reliance. You know, particularly, you know, taking all the way up to the corporation, all the way up to Vought Industries, it would cripple people's reliance and their confidence in these soups, therefore completely taking them off the table.
Well, I think there's definitely that. I also think, you know, to that point, Damon, that they sort of walked up to that line with Homelander, and now I think, you know, obviously there's a decision whether they're going to cross that line or take a step back from it. I also think throughout this show, several times they've mentioned that the reason why they use Compound V on children is that the acceptance rate is much higher with kids, but they've never once said you can't use it on adults, and I think that's an ace they're keeping in their back pocket.
Yep, I agree.
I think they're at some point, the boys are going to take Compound V, and then that is, you know, a game changer, because they could get powers. Also, it's likely one or two or three of them are going to die, and that's an emotional card they can pull.
you know?
Yep.
There are places to go with this. So I'm all in. Like, this is the wildest shit I've seen in a while. So I'm in.
It is. I like the new age of, you know, I mean, we're still right here in the golden age of comic book, TV and film. And they've started to delve into the strange. I mean, with stuff like this and Umbrella Academy and Doom Patrol,
they've
kind of walked into, all right, well, you know, we know that the good versus evil comic book story. Let's take that a step further and in different directions. And it's just, it's nice that, you know, nice. I don't know if The Boys is, I should say nice about The Boys, but I mean, it's interesting. It's interesting the direction they can kind of look at with a show like this. And I appreciate it.
It's definitely nice in execution. You know what I'm saying?
Sure.
And
like,
look at us living through two of the golden ages. We got the golden age of hip hop, and now we're getting the golden age of comic to film. Like, look at us living our best motherfucking lives.
This shit is specifically for our age group.
Yeah.
It really is. You know, a nerdy black kid never had it so good.
You ain't never lost. Shit, nerds everywhere. Not just nerdy black kids at this point.
Basically.
There you go.
So yeah, I mean it ended well. I'm looking forward to another season. I mean, I think it was the most watched show on Amazon Prime yet.
It has to be. It's also the most zeitgeisty. You know what I'm saying? Like, well, it's so.
And it's getting a spinoff that's going to focus on a school of supers set during, you know, in the same universe, seemingly training them to be, you know, future members of the Seven or
something. X-Men.
Say what?
I said, so we got X-Men.
Yeah, so I guess that there's a story in The Boys that I have not read yet that the idea is it's kind of, I guess, the one of the characters at the school is kind of the Professor X type, except that, you know, in The Boys universe, he's like a molester, a child molester. And of course he is, right? I mean, in this storyline. But they've seemed to indicate that it could kind of follow that. Maybe not exactly, but maybe that's what they're going to kind of look at this time. I mean, this one kind of deconstructed the Justice League. You know, maybe this show deconstructs the X-Men.
That would be good. I mean, and, you know, we already saw Jean Grey, didn't we?
Yeah, I mean, I'm assuming at some point they're going to tie. I mean, she could be a character that could easily make the jump from this show to a spinoff as well.
Absolutely. Agreed. 100%.
I mean, I think 100%. She's very firmly in for next season, though.
Oh, yeah. And she'll be back because she escaped and we never saw her again. So,
So we gotta talk. I mean, for y'all, I mean, y'all don't care about this, but like, again, this is produced by Eric Kripke, is it not?
Yep.
Who produces another show? What's that show called? Supernatural. one of the main characters.
That's Tone's favorite show of all time.
I mean, yo, it's my show. Look, look. This is my, you know, you. Some people eat, some people eat Twinkies. I don't do that shit. You know what I'm saying? Some people smoke Newports. I get that shit up. I don't do that shit no more. Everybody got the guilty pressure, right? Supernatural is what I'm sticking with.
Supernatural, timeless, revolution.
Same. So, Eric Kripke's producing this joint. And I just heard tale that my homeboy, Dean, from Supernatural is getting a gig on this show. Third season, he's Soldier Boy, the corollary for Captain America.
Oh yeah, okay. Homelander? I did just read. So the third season is supposed to be it's going to bring in a character from the comics that's the Captain America analog, except he's like, oh gosh, what's his name? I just read about this too, Tony.
Soldier Boy. His name is Soldier Boy.
Soldier Boy. That's it. Yes.
Wow.
Yeah. Could they make it more? Yes.
That is amazing. Soldier Boy. Soldier Boy. It's fantastic. Okay.
And don't you hope that he at some point they actually play a Soldier Boy song when he's on screen next year?
Of course.
Jensen Ackles already took that from you. He did that in his announcement that he got the joint. That's how I found out about it. I mean, I'm not saying I'm, you know, on his YouTube page or anything like that, but I mean,
wow. Wow. So funny. So, yeah. So the big moment here, Stormfront goes completely mental with the sin.
Yep.
To quote Robert Downey Jr., she goes full retard.
No, yeah, I'm not even gonna go that way.
I'm gonna do it.
Yeah, I'm like that. I would rather just say she goes full racist. She talks about there being a race war, and that we need you on our side.
Oh yeah,
it was the first time that you saw Homelander fully understand who she was.
Yes,
and he was like, "Oh shit."
Yeah. It did give you the, when you saw his face and you go, for a moment, I was just like, oh, he really does kind of follow the cape on his back to a degree. Okay.
Yep.
All right. I appreciate that.
And we talked about this for a little bit because I was disappointed in him that when she said, like, I'm a literal Nazi, that he didn't flip the fuck out. You know what I'm saying? Like, that wasn't him. That wasn't the part where he boned out. And I think, you know, there are corollaries to our current time when people say, like, hey, not every Trump supporter is a racist, but every Trump supporter agreed that racism was a deal breaker.
Yeah, there was racism was not a bad thing. So,
yeah, so I mean, that's where we are in the boys' universe. He said, hey, I can rock with this because, you know, we have good sex. You understand me.
Yep.
I mean that's an incredible analogy there.
They wrote the show. Don't give me the credit.
No. I'm just saying. I mean, it's right there.
Right. It's right there, motherfucker. Golly.
I mean, the motherfucker. He has an American flag as a cape.
Yep.
I mean, Captain America has an American flag as a fucking shield.
Yeah, but this is different. This is different.
Is it though?
Yeah, it's different. You know, particularly like Cap has always stood for what the best of any personal interpretation of our country's tenets are. Right? Well,
sure. Cap has been, I mean,
Homelander is not.
We've had
there's a major difference. Homelander's a Republican and Cap is a Democrat.
Ooh. I don't necessarily
I feel like Cap is an independent.
Yeah, I don't think that's Cap true
about that two-party shit.
Yeah, I think Cap is a right or wrong, good and evil type dude. I don't necessarily think he is.
He has no Democrat party affiliation. Cap is for everybody. He's for Republicans. Yeah. He's for Democrats.
I think a lot of his rhetoric early on rang conservative and Republican, but as the world changed around him, I think he became a little bit more centrist. I think he's an independent.
I would agree. Cap is absolutely an independent. He is about right or wrong. Cap is as close to, I mean, we all read Civil War, you know what I'm saying? So like we had this debate then, you know, we had America as American enterprise and capitalism, represented by Tony Stark, Iron Man. We had America's ideas, democracy, freedom, etc., represented by Captain America. So I think that, you know, if we're going to really, really, really make that, you know, that comparison, I think we could obviously say that Tony Stark is a Republican.
Iron Man makes far too much money not to be.
Come on, get out of here. And Cap, you know, who, as far as I know, is still living in the Bronx and ain't got no money.
Cats from Brooklyn. Don't get it fucked up.
Sorry. Brooklyn. My bad. You're right.
And it's not a coincidence that in that story Cap is the hero and Stark is the villain.
Well, yeah, no, that wasn't a coincidence at all. But I think to Damon's point, you know, Cap is he's non-party affiliated.
No. I like that.
Yeah, no, he's for everybody. If you're a Republican, you can love Captain America.
Yeah.
You know, like, don't feel like, yeah, everybody can love Cap. It's all good.
Yeah, the difference is Homelander is only for himself. He don't give a shit about y'all. He don't care about the country. You know, and that was the other thing. I think that was also something that he started to recognize. When she started to talk about her shit, he was like, wait a minute, you give a shit about this?
Yep.
Baby, I don't care about myself and my kid, who also has my powers. I'm not tripping off anybody else. I ain't fucking with them. So.
And I got to respect that. You know? Like,
I found it very difficult. And then to see the way that everyone else reacted around that was really fucking, I guess, refreshing, right? The natural reaction of, yeah, Nazis are bad. Fuck that. Right? Let's find a way to placate to them and find a middle ground. Nazis are bad. Fuck that. And the woman on woman fight.
I don't know another response to that.
I mean, your boy has already told you, you know, stand down and, you know, stand by. So.
That's my boy. That's my boy. All right.
Look, he's not yours. But I don't want to put that on you, but you know, all I'm saying.
don't put that evil on.
No,
me.
I'm not gonna put the evil on you. I get to wear that hat if he wins. And they're like, oh, your boy, and I'm like, man, I didn't vote for him just because I'm white.
Yes. Yes, white people will be the ones who put him in office as he wins again.
Well, yeah, man, he, man, shit.
Political analysis is that white women are the ones who put him in office. So I'm just saying,
53% strike again. Man. Fuck all of them. They deserve everything they get. And Bill Burr is going to be sitting on top of a heap of heat. Good God,
he ain't scared.
No, he definitely.
He ain't worried.
He's sharpening his fucking pens at this point.
Nah, he ready. He did that shit on
purpose.
He absolutely did.
The one scene that I think caught a lot of people off guard was when all of them took on Stormfront.
Oh, that was a great scene.
And started whooping her motherfucking ass.
Death Proof. That's right out of
Death Proof. Yeah, it was definitely Death Proof.
That shit was cathartic, motherfucker. Like, giggled my ass off that whole scene.
Oh man, it was violent, but also very played very comically. Black comedy.
And look, I just want to, you know, I just want to welcome you to the dark side, Scott, because like it's only comical because you hate that bitch.
Shit, man. Right. Welcome to the dark. I've been on the dark side. I'm
misogynistic as fuck.
I feel like I should get a pass because she's not. She's a Nazi. She's a literal Nazi.
Yep.
Wait, hold on. We're not supposed to enjoy her getting her ass beat by three women on the show?
Yeah, and the women did it. And we saw Kimiko get her shit broke and come right the fuck back and start you know, throwing them bows.
Like, she did not care.
Nope.
That was honestly, I don't think I've seen anything that was as satisfying as that. That was Rocky level satisfying. Like, it was great. It was fucking great.
It was great.
Yeah, and then, you know, Stormfront realizing she's getting her ass kicked and leaves.
And right. And there is no coming back from it. Like, she knows, I'm gonna get my ass whooped. I can't fight these dudes. And the realness of that, like, exclamation of like, fuck this, I'm out, boom.
Yeah, but it was because Maeve showed up. You know, Maeve, yeah, and Starlight. And the thing that where you recognize that Starlight is really a soup. She comes off as a fake soup.
It was this episode and the episode before when we started to realize, like, oh, she's, like, the real deal.
Yeah, she's not just some motherfucker they just put on her, you know, to wear the outfit. Like, she can really go. Also, Black Noir will be back next season. He did not die.
No, he didn't.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's some... There's some thought there. I'm not exactly. I'm. There's a whole plot line in comics that I don't know if they're following or not, which I think they've played very well, because some lines they follow and some lines they don't. But I don't know who or what Black Noir is, and that's kind of cool. I'm not often in that situation.
No, I mean, you've been laying hints like that, because that's a storyline I haven't read, and I think that I think the last episode, even I was one of the people that were like, did he die? That we didn't really know, but I think it's more interesting to have him be around because we don't know what's under the mask.
No, we don't.
And that's too good an opportunity to be a shocking moment to not take advantage of it.
Yeah.
At some point.
But let's get back to my homeboy Jensen Ackles right quick, though. So
no, we're not talking about that. We're gonna say.
I'm only saying that to say, since we're moving back in the past, there's a real opportunity that we get more of a Stormfront in the past, and I think that we will, because she's such a good fucking villain.
I agree, and I mean, that's just because they have said she's not dead, so we definitely are going to get more of her.
Yeah, Aya Cash was awesome. She was magnetic this whole fucking season.
She was.
She was magnetic in a way that made me angry. Like,
yep.
God damn.
Yep.
Too good at her job.
Yep. And the guy who plays Homelander from New Zealand, by the way.
Hmm? He's what?
The guy who plays Homelander, Anthony Starr, he's from New Zealand.
I thought I knew he was one of them cats, like New Zealand or Australia, something like that.
I didn't, and it blew my mind when I heard him talk for real. I was like, this motherfucker.
Now, my question is, and I've been looking at it, so I've been looking at his face, and I feel like, are there prosthetics? Is he usually using prosthetics, or is his chin really, really like
that? I don't know, but I've said this before, him having the no lips and a big mouth freaks me out.
Yeah,
it freaks me the hell out.
Yeah, it's weird.
It is really weird.
Yeah,
he just stand like he, they just show his face, and I'm going like, man, something like it looks like they digitally like
I'm saying
it up like they did with Henry Cavill taking the mustache off in Justice League. That's just what it looks like. And I'm like, that's his natural look. Like what?
Yeah, there's a real uncanny valley thing going on there, and I assumed it was makeup, but goddamn.
I mean, he kind of, I've seen him in interviews too. He kind of looks the same.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just weird. It's a weird look, but it works for the character perfectly.
Yeah, man. I mean, Anthony Starr's great. Homelander is a dude that he's a narcissist, but then you start to find out that this motherfucker also has been through trauma. We talked about it with Lovecraft, hurt people, hurt people. He talked about the idea that people were afraid of him at 13, and because they were so afraid of him, they didn't know how to deal with him. Like, he gave you the whole history behind how we got to where we are. Nobody knew how to deal with Homelander, and they're deathly afraid of him. And that was just, like, that level of clarity, right? The level of emotional clarity was really fucking good.
Well, I mean, right. And you have to, look, you got to think about this, right? Because, we're all men. We remember going through puberty. Like, let's say everyone you like, say ages 13 to 17, everyone you dealt with was afraid of you, and it was patently obvious to you.
Yep.
What would that turn you into?
Yep.
You know what I mean? Like, how would you react to the world after that? Yep. What kind of maturity, maturity occurs because you run up against an obstacle you can't beat, and so you have to sort of like evolve. That's what maturity is. It's just evolution. But what if you never have to evolve because you are always the strongest and fastest dude in the room? What do you do with that?
Yep.
And people stop
running against you.
Yeah, at a certain point people stop challenging you. You could say the sky is fucking polka dot, and a motherfucker would agree with you, because who's trying to get on your bad side?
Yeah.
What would that do to you on a long-term basis?
Like, yeah, you're not the fastest motherfucker in the world because nobody will race you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, like that shit would, it would do a ton to you emotionally and would leave you stunted as fuck. You've never had a real relationship. That's the thing that comes back. Stuntfront was his first real relationship.
For real. I mean, and if we're really going to go there, if we're talking about, I mean, look, I'm just going to go there. Y'all can be quiet. I'll cover for you. But if, you know, when we talk about consensual relationships, relationships are relationships between people who have equal agency and equal power. But if you are a storm, if you are a Homelander, no one has equal power or agency with you. So literally every sexual relationship you have has to be rape.
Yeah, but Stormfront was the first.
Except for Stormfront. Exactly, except for Stormfront. And I think that was part of the reason why he was so drawn to her, because if all you hear is fear, your whole life, everyone around you is in a constant state of fear and panic. Heartbeat elevated, sweat pumping out, cortisol, I'm sure you smell that shit if you assume, like, everyone around you stinks and is loud. Yeah. And for once, you run across someone who is quiet and smells good and seems to want you. Why wouldn't you dive in head first into that shit?
Yep. And willing to overlook their issues. And here we are. You got
dude, at the end, he damn near overlooked her enough to, like, I mean, when he found out his son is the one that did it, he was, I was afraid for his son for a minute.
Yeah, exactly.
I was too, but I also thought about this for a quick second. So there's two things going on here. There's the I live in a world of cardboard scenario where Superman constantly, or Spider-Man, if we call it that, constantly holds back, right? So the scene where she says, laser my tits, he hits her with the laser vision, but not that hard because he's still afraid he's going to hurt her.
Yep.
But he's just excited that he can even do that, right? Yep. So there's that. Or he really gave it to her, and in that release triggered other releases, and that's why he really fell for her. But his son cut her to ribbons. That cat don't even know his full power yet.
Yeah, but he knew he was angry because mommy got hurt.
Right.
Yeah.
Was his impulse.
Yeah, so exactly. And spoiler, mommy died.
So, yeah.
Again, we spoiled all this shit. All of it.
Yeah, all this shit. And when that motherfucker exploded, ooh, we motherfuckers had to die.
So the thought is here, like, is his son stronger than him?
Right. Who knows? You know, and I think the bigger thing is recognizing that, to Scott's earlier point, Billy the Butcher was left with a choice. He can honor the love and relationship he had with his wife, who told him to protect the kid at any cost, or he can go with his natural inclination. And you know what happened? He honored his wife.
He did.
You know, he left him with some butcher words of wisdom. Don't be a cunt.
It's good advice.
Great. Just don't be a dick, right?
Don't be a dick.
And then, you know, after you make it through this particular portion of the show, the real shit for next season shows up.
Oh, yeah.
Where they let you in that, you know, A-Train is back in the 7. And
which is great that he is and the Deep's not.
Yeah, Deep is just the eternal whipping boy, which I think is hysterical.
No. I hope they keep going with that.
No. Just keep sitting on the Deep.
Yeah, he can.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Don't kill him. Don't kill him. Don't do anything. Just keep shitting on him.
Yeah. No redemption arc. You are just our eternal whipping boy.
Yeah, that's exactly.
I love that. I love it when he's sitting there like, raging about how A-Train got into, and he's listened to all the stuff he did for him too.
He's talking about how bad the blowjobs were and how bad the lady was. That shit was amazing. Yes.
Oh, it's so good.
It was great. It was awesome.
But it's also, you know, it's also, you know, a larger allegory. Like, yo, when you make a deal with the devil,
yep,
how do you not expect to get fucked?
Touche.
Literally what you signed up for, son. So
yep.
Don't be mad at me.
And then we find out that Claudia DeMitt, whom plays, what is her name in the show? She is Victoria, is also a soup.
Yep.
And she is the one who set off all of the heads exploding in Converse.
Which none of us guessed that.
Nobody guessed that. Didn't see it coming at all. Not
only that, but appears to be working with Vought.
Right.
So, and of course, she hires Huey at the very end.
Yep.
Well, how could she not?
Like, good God, man. Like, that shit was so good.
It was. It's a great setup for next season.
The Boys is wild. Like, rarely does a show start out, like, in the bleachers and doesn't at some point make its way down to the playing field. These motherfuckers are in the parking lot. Like, they are so far out of bounds.
Oh, yeah.
You'll be on the interstate highway pretty soon. I don't know what they're going to do.
And then also to get to the point where the Boys themselves were almost secondary to what was happening in this story.
So, you know, that's one of the really interesting things about the show I like. It's called The Boys, and yet, I know that Carl Urban is supposed to be like the lead character, but is Billy Butcher the lead character?
No.
Absolutely not.
Who's the lead character?
They're the lens. They're what we want to go through.
They're us.
They're us. They're your audience. If I had to call the main character like right now, I would say probably Ryan. Probably Ryan's the main character. What we got before we saw him was a prologue. Now we're in his story.
I think it's Huey, Butcher, and Homelander. I feel like they're equal as main characters.
If you're gonna go there, I would probably throw in Starlight into that too.
But I think Starlight became that as she is Huey's love interest, and they're together now, and that's cool.
You consider them a unit.
Yeah. I don't necessarily find her particularly interesting. But yeah, I find them as a unit. They're together. Mother's Milk was great. We saw him make it home for a bit.
Yeah, but no, he's clearly a B character, and that's fine. Like, there's nothing wrong with that. He's wonderful.
Yeah, Lazarus is fantastic at what he does. So.
Yeah, he's wonderful. Give me all of it. Like, there's talk of him playing John Stewart, the Green Lantern.
Yeah.
I'm good with that.
I love it.
I'm on board.
Absolutely love it.
I'm good with that. Definitely good on that.
Yep.
I would say Huey. I would say Starlight. I would say we gotta get a second. We gotta get like a cross perspective though. So we need one more, but from a different story segment. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah. I'd be very interested to see what happens next year, recognizing that there are more people with powers and we don't even know who they are. And as of yet, we have not gone down the path of having the Boys have powers. So, you know, I'm
not yet.
Which is still, isn't that like the show's called The Boys? We've had two seasons and they have not had powers yet. Yeah. When in the first issue of the comic, they have powers.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think it's good.
I like it. I'm just like, it's wild that that's not something that's happened yet.
Yep.
Well, I think, you know, look, I think the idea is, you know, it's build up. You know, if they've caused the soups this much trouble, just being normally abled humans, imagine what's going to happen when they get these powers. And I think the powers are really going to be sort of like Deus Ex Machina. I'm sure I said that wrong.
But like, third show we've done this.
I don't get the pronunciation of it. I don't. But the point is, like, I'm sure they're going to be the MacGuffin. Let me just say the MacGuffin. Fuck you. So,
okay. That shit ain't no better, but yeah, sure. Got it.
I said MacGuffin right. Fuck you. let's say them getting powers at the, you know, at the, you know, at the perfect moment is going to be the MacGuffin that saves them. I'm with it. I feel like they laid the breadcrumbs enough for us to see, like, okay, this is a thing that could happen and it's going
to
happen
now. I mean, I thought it would happen when they had to, like, fight Stormfront, but they all just ejected and then have to fight her or something.
Well,
They didn't, and it was great. They other ways around it, you know. Kimiko.
There's no better way.
I agree. No better way. Particularly recognizing you've now kept the story alive moving into season three. So, you know.
And conversely, so the whole Rise of the Seven.
That movie in the background?
Right. That movie in the background that they're playing and the storyline that they had in that story said, you know, girls get it done, was all brought into place because the showrunner and the quasi showrunner saw Avengers Endgame and that one female moment where, like, all the female heroes were together and said, this is so fucking contrived and bullshit and, like, I can't stand this. And so they decided to build that moment into the Boys, but on a satirical tip. That's why we got all that. Girls get it done. And now we're going to have, like, a media storm around this. Oh, well, guess what? Maeve is gay. And da, 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 da. All of that came from that one moment. And I'm with it. And so for them to take that and flip it on its head and then come back and say, all right, we got these female heroes, these real heroes that are, like, fucking with this, like, fake-ass hero, and they're upset. And it's not pretty. It's not cute. We're just whooping this bitch's ass. Like, that's what we're doing. We're going to beat you black and blue.
Yeah. To the white meat.
Yeah, we're going to beat you down to the white meat. And there's no, we're not going to apologize, no explanation. You already know. This is on site. You know what's happening.
That's it, on site. Yeah. Yep. I agree. But yeah, it's a great season. I think this season was better than last season. I think the show has found like a really good sense of the characters. They use them well. And they use restraint to hold stuff back long enough to leave themselves some room for next week. So I like that shit a lot.
I agree.
No arguments.
So before we get into anything else, I think we should hold it for the next show since we don't have any big shows to talk about.
I agree.
So anything else we'll do on the next show. All right.
But that brings up a lot of questions. I mean, I'm looking at HBO Max now, like, man, what's coming up next? I know Mandalorian starts next Friday.
That's right, and they have The Watch. You can do the group watch on it.
Wait, on Disney Plus?
Yeah.
Ooh, that's good.
Yeah, so
that's cool.
I want to say they...
Wait, hold on. Tony, are you caught up on that?
Not yet.
No. Wait a minute. No, I am. We talked about it a couple weeks ago, and I was like, I'm going to finish this shit, and I did. So, yeah.
Okay. All right. So maybe we could do a Mandalorian recap before it starts up next Friday.
I'm with that.
Okay. Now we talking? Yeah. That's what we'll do next week. And then we'll get into some heavier what we get out of the room do and other stuff that we got. How's that sound?
And it's October, too. So, right. I mean.
Yeah. So we got.
Oh, by the way, I did. I had the Thing prequel on in the background, and the effects are better than I remember.
Oh, okay.
No, the Thing prequel is not. No, it's not bad.
No,
I was actually surprised when Damon told me they weren't practical effects because they're very good.
They did well. The ship size.
I still got my home girl Noomi Rapace. We're not going to talk about what I used to say, but. No.
It's
Mary Elizabeth Winstead. Yeah. It's Mew.
No.
Yes, Mew. Yes.
Yep. Yeah, it is. Yep.
I just watched it.
Yep, Mary Elizabeth Winstead. Yep.
Yeah.
Sold it.
You're thinking Prometheus.
Yeah.
I am Prometheus. You're right.
Yep.
Ooh. You know what? What happened was it was all this Lovecraft country. I just got these white girls mixed up. It's Lovecraft.
it's just that one white girl. They all look the same. They all look the same.
That's Lovecraft country. That's not my
fault. I love that. That's I'm here for that shit. but yeah, man, this has been Get Out the Room. You can find us anywhere good podcasts are found: Apple, Google, Podomatic, Stitcher Radio.
Man, shout our name in a crowded room, man. You're going to be all right.
Yeah, seriously. Seriously. There are not many like us, so you'll always kind of find us. For the boys, we are going to be about this bitch, and we'll see y'all next week. Because we still got shit to do next week, which is pretty outstanding.
Yeah.
I'm excited about it. All right.
Peace.
Peace.
Peace.